Scotia Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, Assistant Professor of Educational Leadership at UW-Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
And a very pleasant good morning and welcome to this edition of Education Matters here on WGTD HD, serving Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. I'm your host today, Steve Brown, and we have two segments today. In segment one, my guest will be Mary Snyder, who taught at Tremper High School for well over 30 years, and after her retirement, she was elected to the Kenosha Unified School District Board of Education, and she has served in that position for 9 years, including several years as president of the board. She will be stepping down in April of this year. In segment two, my guest is Ann Moore, and we'll be talking about something very different, and that's something called cowboy ethics. In our first segment, I'm very pleased to welcome into our studios here at WGTD on the Kenosha campus of Gateway Technical College, Mary Snyder. And Mary is a member of the Kenosha Unified School District School Board, and she has served on the board for 9 years. She's currently vice president, and before that, she was also president for 3 years, and we'll talk more about her background. I'll just lead right in and saying, Mary, as always, welcome into our studios.
Thank you very much, Steve. It's my pleasure to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
Sure, of course. First of all, at the outset, just in case someone has not read the papers and hasn't looked at, you know, who is running in the primaries and, you know, who's running and not running in the upcoming election, you decided not to run for re-election this time.
Yes, I did. It's 9 years. This is my 9th year, as you said. It is very, very time-consuming to do the job reasonably well. And I know you know that because you serve on the board, too.
Mm-hmm.
But the time commitment is getting beyond what I'm willing to do.
That's very true. For our listening audience, I serve on the school board out in the western part of Kenosha County in Salem. You know, let's first start with, you've been on the board for 9 years. And as you look back at your 9 years on the board, and you've been a board member with several superintendents, of course. But just, give some perspective in terms of all the things that you have been involved in that you would put on the positive list, on the plus side of all the experiences that you have had as a school board member. And then after that, I also want to talk about your experiences for 35 years as a teacher in KUSD.
This was a tremendous learning curve because it's a very different perspective. You have to look at big picture ideas. And that was a little bit new to me. I was comfortable in the classroom. I knew what I needed to do there and was willing to change those things. But on the board, for one thing, the financial piece was not something that was clear to me. And it took me a long time, and I had some really good mentors who helped me understand what the finances are for public education. They are complicated. And they're very restricting in some ways because money is allocated to certain projects and certain funds and can only be used in that direction. And I think that's one of the problems that the public has understanding. If we have this many dollars, why aren't we doing this and so or what specific people want? And sometimes it's not possible. And, of course, we have mandated things, too, and those are increasing. And that has really become more and more complicated. I think the financial piece was the biggest learning curve. It's also a way it's forced me to look at big picture ideas. I have to see the whole picture, all the schools, all the staff, all the students. We have over 22,000 students in Kenosha. That's a big variety of mm-hmm. people, what they want, what they need, the services we should provide for them, the things we should be doing. That's a lot of different people to take into consideration. So that's a big lifetime, I think, big life learning experience was looking at that big picture and trying to sort out priorities that meet the needs of the most people possible.
Mm-hmm. As a board member,
I can relate to this as well. I'm sure there are very few places that you can go in Kenosha if you're going shopping, if you're at Walmart or if you're at Walgreens or CVS or any of the great shopping that we have here in Kenosha, where you're not going to see someone, either someone you know or someone who knows who you are, and they'll address, they'll say hello, and then they'll talk about some issue in the school, in the district. Over the years, how have you dealt with that in terms of just someone in particular, even if it's a stranger who comes up and says, "Aren't you Mary Snyder? Aren't you on the school board?" And then they launch into whatever issues. How have you dealt with that over the years?
Actually, I've enjoyed it. For one thing, it's given me contact with other people I probably would never have met.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm flattered that they're willing to talk to me, that they feel comfortable enough to approach me, even if it's a point of disagreement. I can't say I've ever had anybody yell at me. It's never been like that. But they might say, "Would you think about this?" or "Could we talk about this?" And there are people that I've met that way that I actually have gone to coffee dates with to sit down and talk about specific issues that they wanted me to know about or things that they thought should be brought forward. So I've enjoyed that part of it. That's not an issue for me. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like meeting different people. I like hearing what other people say. And I think the experience on the board has given me a broader perspective of how to understand people in the community.
Mm-hmm. If you could think back to that first year that you were on the board, and you kind of alluded to it in terms of some of those initial challenges, in particular with regards to the budget and how finances are handled. But after retiring from KUSD after 35 years, and you taught English and speech and communications and journalism at Tremper, that first year, what was that first year like for you in terms of that? I mean, that was, as you said, a whole different mindset. It was just like a change. I mean, you were involved with the teachers, with with the teachers' union. You were very active, and then all of a sudden, you're on the other side of the table. Maybe if you can share what that was like for you that first year in particular.
The first year in particular, it was a different side of the table. It wasn't completely on the other side. As you mentioned before, I was also a union leader. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of experience nationally being on committees for NEA and for WEA. So I met people from all over the country and saw what their ideas were. So I had been exposed to more of the big picture ideas about education, particularly, because that's what we were focused on. Student learning, how can we make this better? How can I make it work? When I moved to the role of being on the Board of Education, then I had to look at the overview of what education was. It wasn't just about learning, because we have to pay for it, too. Mm-hmm. And we have to accommodate all kinds of things that I'd never seen in my classroom. So it expanded the horizons a great deal. It forced me to look at, I think one of the things, too, and I would encourage anybody who's considering doing this, but go to seminars that talk about board responsibilities, because that's an issue. What is the board supposed to do? And what are, the teachers? We know pretty much, I knew what teachers are supposed to do, but even certain administrators in the district, I didn't understand what their roles were and what their positions were. And I didn't understand exactly what it meant to be a board member. And I got some great advice from our board attorneys, our legal people, and from the Wisconsin Association of School Boards, mm-hmm. of helping me where can I be the most effective? What can I do the best at? And what are my roles and responsibilities? And they were a little different than I thought they were.
Mm-hmm.
But 'cause it's an overseeing. It's not managing. It's overseeing and looking at policy, looking at direction, and again, like I said, big picture ideas, and of course the fiscal responsibility, which is ours.
Sure, of course. As you look back at the 9 years of serving on the board and all the decisions that you had to make, without getting into any specifics, when you're not in the majority and you're voting on something, just from the standpoint of leadership and being a leader as you are, not only on the board and in education, but in our community, how do you balance all that?
It's not easy to do that because you kind of have to swallow personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think it helps, first of all, when you understand the role of the board. And once that board decision is in place, I guess I compare it to maybe the speed limit that I don't like in front of my house. I may not think it's necessary, but I'll follow it because other people have decided, for reasons that I don't necessarily agree with, that's what it's going to be, and I will follow that. And I need to support. I think that's the strength of a board, is when we support each other. When the decisions are by a majority, which is how they're made, then we support each other and move on, because there's always something else to deal with. You can't get bogged down with the decision you didn't like, because there's a lot more to be made and a lot more things to talk about. And we need to look at the big picture. How does this impact Kenosha? How does it impact our students? How does it impact our staff? And then we move forward with that decision.
Mm-hmm. As you look to the future, as far as the KUSD district, what do you see as the top maybe two or three major areas that the district and our state has to start looking at or continue to look at?
Well, I think it's always going to be funding, how the schools are funded, that we provide enough funding to have as many opportunities for students as possible. I think one of the strengths in Kenosha has been using the non-instrumentality charter schools, that we offer a Lakeview option, we offer a Harborside option, we have Brompton, we have choices for parents. But as we know, those choices are not big enough because they're waiting lists at all of those schools. So some students do much better at the big comprehensive high school. Both my daughters attended Trumper and did very well there. We're very happy there. But that's not the same for everyone. And sometimes students decide early if they want some kind of technical background or if they want some kind of the musical theater experiences that they can enjoy. And many of those things are now district-wide for students, so students from all schools can participate in some of those programs. Certainly that's one of our strengths. Our fine arts programs are spectacular. Our sports programs we offer many opportunities, and I think we need to continue to look at those also vocationally. We have some partnerships with Gateway now and with Parkside and Carthage. Those are things that we need to continue to explore to be sure that students have as many opportunities. The world's changing.
Mm-hmm.
More things are happening. I don't understand all the technical parts of it at all, and I always had students even then who understood it better than I did. Fortunately, they were always willing to help me out, so we counted on that.
But as we look at how the growth has gone with regards to special education, how well do you think we as educators have dealt with the whole area of special ed?
I think we're doing a better job than we used to, but I think there's room for growth. And one of the things that I see with special ed, as well as with all students in general, more and more students need individualized help, individualized instruction, because they learn differently. And we know that now.
Mm-hmm.
We don't necessarily put them all in the same room and expect them to all do the same things at the same time. Probably what you and I were expected to do. That's not the world today. And I think the more we can individualize and personalize learning and still have the same goals and achievements, but different ways to get there, I think special ed students will benefit. I also think most of the other students in the classroom will benefit as well, because we don't all learn the same way. I know that about myself. I'm sure you do too.
Mm-hmm.
And we are now recognizing it more and trying to provide opportunities for more people to be successful and move on in different ways.
Sure. As you look at your years at Tremper as a classroom teacher in English, speech, language arts, communications, journalism, when you were a first-year teacher and comparing that to, let's say, your 10th year or 15th year, how did you change as a classroom teacher in terms of not just your skills, but dealing with so many different kinds of educational needs of all the students that we have here in the district?
I think I was able to look at it more individually. At first, was very naive, and some things intimidated me, because I wasn't sure how to handle them, being, you know, how I went to school, the courses I had in college where I did my student teaching, which is in Texas, a very different environment than Kenosha. So I think that part of it, but I always loved teaching. I knew I was going to be a teacher since I was in the third grade. That was what I wanted to do. And I had role models who helped me be that kind of a person. So I wanted to be the person that the kids could talk to and come to, and then they'd be able to learn. And I still believe that's true. So I certainly expanded my knowledge base and certainly learned different ways to do things and learned different subject matters. But I grew in my confidence and my ability to work with multiple types of students as more different students came in the door.
Mm-hmm. And my final question for you, as you look back on your years as a school board member and after the end of April or whenever the transition takes place, when the new board is seated, it's usually sometime towards the end of April, what are some of the things that you're going to miss the most about being a school board member?
I'm going to miss the involvement in the schools. I like last week I went and judged the Black History Art Contest at Stoker. I'm going to be the judge for the Art History Bee. I was one of the judges for the Elementary Spelling Bee. I love going to the schools and seeing the activities and the involvement of the students. And I'm going to miss that, because that's going to be a different role. I know I can do it in a different role, but it's going to be different than it is as the school board member being invited to participate in these things, which I thoroughly enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
That part of it I'm going to miss, because I like seeing what they're doing. Our staff does a phenomenal job. They do. I can't compliment them enough for the changes that they've had to make and the situations that they are dealing with. But they're so positive, and there are so many opportunities for students to learn, and I enjoy being a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to miss that.
Well, I want to thank you for being in our studio today, but more importantly, to thank you for your 35 years of service as a classroom teacher here in KUSD, and for your time on the school board, because both are very, very important positions, and they all impact the education of all of our children here in the district.
Well, thank you very much. And I had a wonderful career. I've enjoyed what I do. I've enjoyed meeting the people that I've gotten to share time with and experiences with. So it's been a great journey. Thank you.
And we continue now with Education Matters here on WGTD-HD. And I'm very pleased to welcome via telephone Ann Moore. And Ann Moore is involved with a really neat organization. It's called Cowboy Ethics. And we're going to talk about Cowboy Ethics and what this whole thing is about.
Got a friend up in Missoula, Montana, and he sent me a book written by James P. Owens, Cowboy Ethics. Was rather intrigued with it, and then I found out that Malcolm Baldrige was from Nebraska. He was a cowboy, and putting those things together and looking at the 10 principles of cowboy ethics, I thought, you know, this is really something we ought to implement in our program as well.
Of the 10 principles, 4 became particularly important. Live each day with courage. Take pride in your work. Be tough but fair. And ride for the brand. And cowboy ethics, the code of the West, took on special meaning.
And Ann, welcome to Education Matters.
Well, thank you, Steve. I appreciate you having me on.
Sure, of course. But maybe just give us a bit about your background, your corporate background, your education background, and then maybe we'll just launch into a discussion of what cowboy ethics is all about.
Well, that sounds good, Steve. I was born in Denver, but went to middle school and high school in Michigan. So I love the Midwest. And that's where I really got a good start for having a purpose in my life. And it was going to be teaching. But I took a couple of turns along the way and ended up, rather than teaching, getting my master's in business administration and then going to work for Whirlpool Corporation located in Benton Harbor, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't until I was in my mid-40s and we had had, my husband and I, 4 children that I finally pursued my real passion in life, and that's teaching. So I've been teaching here in Denver now for 12 years. And it was 10 years ago that I received the book, Cowboy Ethics, What It Takes to Win at Life, from a family friend. I was teaching a senior-level English course to students who were at risk, and I mean at risk really for not graduating on time.
Mm-hmm.
And with the class, I think I just said, was called Reading and Studying for Success. Maybe I didn't say that, but it's not a very exciting title for a class. And I was looking for a book that would hook my seniors, that would want to make them better students. And it was Cowboy Ethics. And so I contacted, not knowing I was contacting the author directly, the Center for Cowboy Ethics and Leadership, Jim Mullen, and asked if I could get a class set of books for the fall. He called me on the phone directly the next day, and he told me, if I write curriculum that has critical reading, writing, and thinking skills, he would give me the class set. And so that started off a partnership with him 10 years ago.
Hmm.
And today I'm executive director for the Center for Cowboy Ethics and Leadership.
Right, and then you teach at in the Cherry Creek School District in Aurora, and I noticed in your bio you've also been a dean of students, and I've done that as well. So, all these things that you are doing and have done, it sounds like you're bringing it all together. Let's talk about cowboy ethic in terms of the organization. I mean, in your role as executive director for the center, and the types of things that you do, and how you've seen that impact education literally on the ground.
I will tell you, Steve, it has had a huge impact for students. When I started teaching this, really would be 9 years ago after I got it going, I saw a spark, and this is for at-risk students, a spark and an awakening in the students, because they finally had a code to live by. And in cowboy ethics, Jim Owen wanted to define what the code of the West was, because cowboys lived by the code of the West, but no one ever wrote it down.
Mm-hmm.
So Jim came up with 10 principles to live by, and there are things like live each day with courage, take pride in your work, be tough but fair. So when I started teaching this to my students, we came up with the concept of an 11th principle, a principle that you come up with on your own and that will serve you well as you move through your life, you know, making decisions. So from there, the whole thing really literally went viral. As the state of Wyoming picked it up very quickly. Jim suggested to me that we make a video, a training video,
mm-hmm.
for teachers, and you can find that if you Google Cowboy Ethics, a Life-Changing Approach to Character Education.
Okay.
And that's a very telling video. If any teacher or parent ever wants to know the effect of cowboy ethics, if you watch that video, it's a 13-minute video where we did not script the students. So they absolutely spoke from the heart, and you will see that because at the beginning they say things like cowboys, ethics. They definitely were a little skeptical at the beginning. But by the end, they didn't want to stop with the unit, and it really had a major impact on their lives, not only for at-risk students. I've taught it to students who do very well, you know, who are in AP classes and love it, because I think we're in a world today that I don't think anyone would disagree, that we've kind of lost our way, and students, kids don't always really know if they have a code to live by or even what that is.
Mm-hmm.
So when they find out that, you know, there are anchors in their lives that they can live by and base their decisions on, that really empowers them.
Sure. You know, let me ask you this. You know, in looking at the 10 ethics, you know, a few of the other ones, ride for the brand, talk less and say more, and I think that's extraordinary. And then also the last one on that list, know where to draw the line. And maybe talk more about that, because, you know, as a former high school teacher myself and a principal, that whole idea of, you know, knowing where to draw the line, and also when, like, when do you know when to draw the line?
It's interesting, Steve, that you bring up know where to draw the line. That is the one principle that I tell students can make all the difference in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
If they just know where to draw the line, they will be fine. And I tell them, now I'm at middle school, that they need to be thinking about different scenarios or situations before they get into them and draw the line there.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they can draw the line before, say, they're involved with being tempted with taking drugs or drinking or sex, any of that,
mm-hmm.
if they've already made the decision and they know where to draw the line, it will be very easy for them to say no. If they haven't and they're in the moment, that's when young people often make mistakes. So knowing where to draw the line, I believe, as you just said as well, that's really critical and very beneficial to our young people today.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I've worked with at-risk students in Arizona, in New Mexico, in Texas, and also in Florida. But how have you found the program, the Cowboy Ethics, in terms of having a real impact on students who are at risk in terms of dropping out of school?
Well, I'll give you an example. The first one is Live Each Day with Courage.
Mm-hmm.
When I first taught this, I had an African-American student named Devin. And about 2 weeks into it, we'd only gone through the first couple of principles. He stopped coming to school, and he was a senior, and I had his little sister in my 10th grade English class. So I couldn't get a hold of him, and I finally said, you know, Mackenzie, what's happening with Devin? And she said, I don't know, but he's run away from home because my parents are going through a nasty divorce.
Mm.
So I said, okay. Well, then Devin shows up not too long after that, and he told me almost word for word, he said, Miss Moore, I don't think I would have come back to school if it hadn't been for the principal Live Each Day with Courage.
Hmm.
He said, I decided I can't control what my parents are doing. You know, that's out of his hands. But he said, I can live with courage. And he said, it took me a lot of courage to decide to come back. But he not only came back, he made up all his work and he graduated on time.
Wow.
Ride for the brand.
This interview we're doing is going to air on March 10th, so, you know, it will be just short of a month since the terrible shooting in Florida, in Parkland, Florida, in Broward County, which is like maybe 25 miles due north of where I went to high school, down in Dade County, Florida, in Miami. I'm kind of curious, when you look at cowboy ethics, what kinds of conversations, if you don't mind sharing something that would be pertinent as far as what you talked about in your class?
That's an interesting question because I am teaching sixth graders right now,
mm-hmm.
and we absolutely did have conversations. In that respect, the conversations were a lot about their safety.
Right.
And then, of course, their eyes asking, why would someone do this?
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard for me to relate cowboy ethics because my answer to them is people who do that are definitely seriously mentally ill, and
sure.
I don't know that any of those 10 principles would help. However, I've known a lot of students like this shooter when I was a dean of students.
Mm-hmm.
And I think early intervention with things like these 10 principles would help.
As you look at, you know, the code of ethics, you mentioned the state of Wyoming, and I found it fascinating, and you and I chatted about it briefly before I started the recording, that the state of Wyoming, they adopted as their official code of ethics for the state of Wyoming the Cowboy Ethics by James Owen. Give some of the background how all that came about.
Okay. Jim Owen, obviously the state of Wyoming, maybe not obviously, but they're a cowboy state. There's
sure.
no doubt
of
about
course.
It. They have always liked Jim Owen's book. Many of the corporations up in Wyoming have adopted his 10 principles for their own companies, and same with their state legislatures. So Jim did a video for the state of Wyoming called Cowboy Ethics Alive and Well in Wyoming. And the premiere of that was up in Casper, Wyoming, with, I would say, maybe 150 people.
Hmm.
And there was a question back and forth with Jim, the author, and the guy asked Jim, the moderator said, Jim, what do you want to see happen with this movement next? And it's been a grassroots movement. Jim said, well, I would like to see the state of Wyoming adopt this as their state ethics code.
Hmm.
And there was a state senator, Jim Anderson, in the audience, and this was in January. He stood up and he said, I will sponsor that bill. And in 40 days, we were back up there, and the Democratic governor, so it was a Republican state senator,
mm-hmm.
the Democratic governor signed it into law.
Wow.
You know, like I said to you earlier when you and I were speaking, I've never, ever seen anyone in politics move as quickly as the state of Wyoming did. But I think they did that, and it was bipartisan because the 10 principles are shared values that it seems like we're missing. They're disappearing somehow.
Mm-hmm.
And the state of Wyoming very much values the 10 principles. And I think they found that kind of encompassed the whole way of living for the cowboy life and for business and politicians.
Sure. One of the things that I always like to ask a guest here on Education Matters, when you were growing up, who was a teacher who really had a real impact on you, who influenced you?
Well, I went to a Catholic high school, a very small Catholic high school in St. Joseph, Michigan.
Okay.
And I had two teachers. One was my English teacher, and that's what I teach.
Mm-hmm.
And he influenced me really for the art of writing well. But then my religion teacher did because she went out of – she didn't just stick with Catholic doctrine. She went out to talk about things like we're talking about now. You know, what's right and wrong? Where do we go from here? Much higher level conversations, in my opinion, than black and white answers to questions.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
So to develop my critical thinking – you know, about life and how to live life and how to live it well. And that's what I think the Code of the West and cowboy ethics does for our students today in public schools.
Sure. And when you look at the overall focus of cowboy ethics, I mean, obviously the primary audience, not the only audience, but the primary audience are students. Maybe share with our listening audience work that you've done with teachers, school administrators, maybe you've done some work with school board members, people who make decisions about education, and also teachers who are in the classroom at all levels.
Yes, the work When teachers or administrators or school board members see this, and then they understand what's going on with these 10 principles, they really appreciate it because it's simple, it's back to basics. And the other important thing about it is it's very student-driven, and it's Socratic in nature,
mm-hmm.
where you have a lot of discussions and critical thinking where you challenge students to have a belief, but they have to be able to back it up.
Mm.
And I'll go back to the Parkland shooting. Many of the students have been on the news since that.
Mm-hmm.
And I read an article, an AP article the other day, and I totally agree with it, have been in speech and debate. And they know how to state their position, and they know both sides.
Right.
And I know that's what Cowboy Ethics does for students. It gives them, we do a lot of current events and things like that. They cannot just say, oh, I think this, without backing it up. We go through a lot of critical thinking so that when they do make a statement, they can back it up and show that, you know, this is really what I believe in, and this is why.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen students grow so much through that and bringing in current events with these 10 principles. Because otherwise, kids today aren't listening to the news, and if they are, they just hear a tidbit from their parents, and it's not always correct. So it's just giving them a good, well-rounded education and foundation for living their own lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I've been so impressed with how articulate these students are, and, you know, these students who went through that and others who support them, I really think that they will make a difference, and I think they already have, don't you?
Absolutely. And that's the other thing, Steve. I'm now teaching sixth grade, as I said, and they and these high school students now today in our country are our next generation, and it's that I generation that I call it, you know, from the iPhone being raised.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're seeing out of Florida with those students and what I see with my sixth graders is real hope and strength in America. I don't necessarily see them at all, you know, buried in their screen time and not caring about what's going on
sure.
in our country.
Sure, I would agree. Before we wrap things up, go through each of the 10 ethics, cowboy ethics. I know we've talked about five or six of them, but I want our audience to hear each of them because they are all incredibly important, and I don't want to leave any of those out.
Okay. So number one is live each day with courage, and I'll comment on a few of these.
Sure, please.
That one in particular, the first day I taught this, I was nervous. I remember driving to school thinking, how am I going to teach this? I can't tell them they have to find a burning building, you know,
mm-hmm.
or pull someone out that's drowning in the pool. And I got to school, and I threw it out to them. I said, what do you think this means? And immediately a girl raised her hand, and she said, living each day with courage is just getting out of bed for me.
Mm.
And that was a real aha moment for me. So it has many different looks to it.
Sure.
And then take pride in your work. And if you're going to put your name on it, you better do it well. Always finish what you start. Do what has to be done. And that reminds me of when you were talking about talk less and say more, you
mm-hmm.
know, with our politicians. Let's just do what has to be done. Be tough but fair is number five. And I've always put this out to my students to say, I am sure you never mind if your parents are tough, a teacher's tough, a coach is tough, as long as they're fair.
Right.
Because that's what we all want. And then when you make a promise, keep it. I've been initially surprised that my at-risk students in particular have never really liked this. And when I ask them why, they say because they've had so many promises broken
mm.
to them.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But then we discuss, well, if that's the case, then it's more important than ever that you keep the promises that you're making. And then ride for the brand, we talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
Talk less and say more. Remember that some things are not for sale,
mm.
which I think is good for today.
Absolutely.
And know where to draw the line, which we spoke about. And I absolutely think that's valuable for everyone, but mostly our youth.
Sure. And you know what? My last question is there something that I did not ask you that I should have in terms of cowboy ethics or just how meaningful this program has been and will be in the future?
I don't think so. I just think we all need to keep in mind that the next generation of leaders and doers in our country is being groomed right now in classrooms across the country. So we need heart and integrity in our schools, and I think we saw that in Florida, and our universities and businesses, because that's absolutely vital to the success and future of our country. And I can't emphasize that enough. And I think we're heading the right direction, especially now that I'm with sixth graders. And they've got a lot of hope and promise, and they want to make a difference.
Sure. Well, I want to thank you. My guest on Education Matters has been Ann Moore, Executive Director of the Center for Cowboy Ethics and Leadership. She's also a sixth grade teacher in Aurora, Colorado, which is right near the Denver area. And I want to thank you so much, and thank you and your organization for the incredible work that you do.
Well, thank you, Stephen. Thanks for having me on, and I'm glad that you're teaching this at the university.
Well, and I'll make sure that our listeners have information about the website as well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I'm Steve Brown, and I would like to thank you for joining me this morning here on Education Matters. My guests today were Mary Snyder, who taught at Tremper High School for well over 30 years and also is serving on the Kenosha Unified School District Board of Education and will be stepping down in April after 9 years of service. And also Ann Moore, and we talked about cowboy ethics. For Education Matters here on WGTD-HD, I'm Steve Brown. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
And myself. Our show today is directed by Vicky Dumais. During the dark days of World War II, one of the great untold stories is how women were recruited to become undercover operatives in the national effort to defeat Nazi Germany. They were members of the OSS, which was the Office of Strategic Services, which was the precursor to the present-day CIA. Although this particular story is a fictional drama, it is based on the real and dangerous situations that these brave women faced. They were not James Bond spy women, but dedicated women who worked tirelessly to defeat the Nazi war machine. Our stars are from the 91.1 Players, and support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of Aaliyah Dumais and McTernan, and also the not-for-profit Brown Ulster Performing Arts Foundation, located in the village of Salem Lakes, Wisconsin. The book Sisterhood of Spies, written by Elizabeth McIntosh, was used as a primary reference for our radio drama today, and if you go to the Brown Ulster Foundation.org website, you can get more information. And I had the wonderful opportunity of spending several days interviewing Betty McIntosh at her home in Virginia well over 10 years ago. Betty passed away in 2015 at the age of 100. At the end of our broadcast today, I'll tell you more about Betty McIntosh and also Edwin Ned Putzel, who was chief of staff to General Wild Bill Donovan, who headed up the OSS. Mr. Putzel also served as a consultant.
It is 1943, and OSS Director General Wild Bill Donovan and Edwin Ned Putzel, chief aide to the director, are engaged in a discussion about the agency's budget and staffing in the European theater.
Ned, you know that the Dulles brothers, John Foster and Allen, support what we're doing. They were the ones who lobbied for OSS with Roosevelt back in 37. So why the hell are they playing with our budget now?
Well, maybe they had no idea how much it would cost.